June 3rd, I want to go against Anderson, maybe in Rio. Who knows?
What I want to propose to them is that it's a creating a league inside the UFC, the Legend League. So we can bring back these retired people, bring back to the game and sell more tickets, give more opportunities where they can make more revenue.
T-Mobile Arena reserves June 10th for Mayweather McGregor.
Good. Yeah.
Good googly move.
It's fucking happening.
I don't Google my name. You know, I don't read books.
Look at Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy. Knockout.
Watching Raw, huh?
There is nothing on TV anymore.
Raw's been on for 20-something years.
I know, it's the longest-running weekly episodic television show in TV history.
Reportedly.
I think that might actually be true. Only in the sense that, like, soap operas and all that do take a break. And in theory, Raw has never had a repeat, never taken a break, and so on. I don't know if any other, like, written TV show has ever done that.
I don't know.
I don't really care.
No one does.
It's fucking Raw. There's no football on. Baseball, I'm watching the WBC. Basketball was yesterday. I'll find hockey or something, maybe. Yeah, that's what I should do, find hockey. Anyways, let's do the show.
All right. Hello, and welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com, iTunes, and Google Play. My name is Matt Grady, and I am joined here on the show by Michael Coughlin, Esquire. I know you liked that last week, so we'll bring it back. It wasn't even last week. It was only 5 days ago. This week, we will be discussing UFC Fight Night from Fortaleza, Brazil, a potential Legends League within the UFC. More Mayweather versus McGregor talk, maybe a little Ali act, and this weekend's major, major MMA events. So obviously this past week we had a show on Saturday night. It was UFC Fight Night, Belfort versus Gastelum from Brazil. Attendance was 14,069 people in Fortaleza. In the main event, Kelvin Gastelum defeated Vitor Belfort by TKO at 3:52 in the first round. Fun fight while it lasted. Belfort came out throwing, but to say he doesn't look like he used to look physically is probably an understatement. He was looking like 50 years old, not 40 years old out there. But he, in the first couple minutes, he threw some punches that would have knocked Gastelum out if they had connected. He was throwing hard, but he just couldn't land the punch. Gastelum won by basically TKO, knocked Belfort down twice, and then kind of had a few punches on the ground before it was stopped. What would you think of the fight?
Do you know Belfort's still married to his wife?
Who else would he be married to?
I'm surprised that that marriage has lasted.
They've been married a long time?
Yeah, Joanna. I mean, she's been around with him forever, and she was a Brazilian playmate.
Okay.
So, Brazilian playmate, cage fighter. Like, this didn't work for Tito. So, I'm really impressed by Vitor there. Maybe he really
does
have Jesus on his side.
I was going to say, he's a pretty religious guy. I could see that one lasting, maybe.
He's not eating meat this Friday.
She should have been eating meat or something. Jesus.
Yeah. You know, Vitor, he's done. He's been done for a while. He's even admitted it. The next fight, he says, is going to be his last. He wants to fight in Rio. He's openly campaigning for, as you teased earlier, a Legends League, which is, again, a de facto admission of, I can't do this shit. These guys are too young and good. You know, he showed some of the old hand speed, sure. And I thought he actually moved better than I had expected him to. Gastelum, you know, just younger and faster and hits harder, and I don't know. There's nothing really be gleamed from this fight. I mean, it's a young guy who's moving up in weight, and it was very obvious that he was moving up in weight. Like, even melted Vitor Belfort was still just bigger than Gastelum. He was just physically, his frame was so much bigger. I thought, oh boy, that's that's not going to go well in the long run for Gastelum. But, you know, Gastelum got the, you know, a pretty clear victory there. Nobody can argue with it. I thought the stoppage was fair given what had happened to Vitor and his age. Although I could, if he had protested it, I would have understood why. But it seemed more like, I think Big John just thought, I'm not going to let this guy take any more damage, even though he probably would have for a younger fighter. So good for Kelvin. He gets the high-profile win, calls out Anderson Silva, and continues to beat up guys who will lose to him and then retire, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting gimmick. He's basically just beating up older, bigger guys at this point, because obviously we had Kennedy, now we had Belfort, and now he just challenged Anderson Silva to this next show in Brazil. I think it's in June. In Rio. So, I mean, to me, that was a smart move, calling out Anderson. It'd be a big fight for him, a big name. And I don't know how that fight would go necessarily. Cause I think Anderson's probably got a little more in the tank than Vitor does, but, a big name and potentially a big win for Gastelum at middleweight.
Yeah, honestly, if Gastelum were to win that fight, especially if he did it impressively, but really, no matter how he does it, I would consider that a pretty good win because, you know, Anderson's not what he once was, but he still is a guy that arguably beat the current middleweight champion, took on Daniel Cormier on, like, 72 hours notice and went the distance and scared Cormier from even really doing anything, just got a questionable win, but still a win over Lorenz Larkin. Like, he's showing these...
It wasn't Larkin.
Oh, fuck, who was it?
Brunson.
Oh, they're the same guy, aren't they?
Similar.
You know, but he's still... That was Larkin, I don't know. Did Larkin fight somebody?
No, Larkin's, like, trying to figure out if he's going to Bellator or not. He hasn't fought in a while.
Whatever. This is a black guy that does striking. But still, Anderson's, you know, he's shown the ability to hang with younger guys, and his skill set still seems to be there, and his chin is there. Like, Vitor's a shot fighter in every respect. Anderson's just old, but he's really, I think, kind of rejuvenated himself in an odd way. I don't see him as shot at all. He's just not as good. So that would be a real tough fight for Kelvin, but good for him. If you got to stay at that weight class, it's way abnormal for you. Fucking go for the biggest fights possible. Make your money.
Yeah, and like you said, Belfort admits, like, this is pretty much the end for him. He says that his body just isn't the same anymore, which anybody with a working eye could see.
He said that at 21, when he looked back at his 19-year-old body, he's like, it just doesn't look like that anymore. I don't know what's going on.
So he has one more fight on his deal. He says he would like to fight on that Rio show. When asked about possibly fighting Anderson in a rematch, he said he didn't want to fight another Brazilian. He'd prefer somebody else. But he had this one caveat in a couple interviews where he said he would be willing to keep fighting if the UFC created a Legends League. And he's basically wants to go and talk to the new owners and talk to them about guys like Chuck Liddell and Brian Stann. Those were the two guys he mentioned repeatedly for some reason about possibly doing these fights because it could bring some extra income for the fighters and some extra income for obviously WME, IMG. Does that interest you at all? Would you like to see Vitor Belfort versus Chuck Liddell in 2018?
Fuck no. Like, this is not...
would anyone?
Oh, people would... Look, if it's on TV, I'll watch it. And people would tune in because names are names, but this is not fucking like baseball where they can trot out people for the old-timers game. This is a fucking sport where you punch somebody in the fucking skull. You shouldn't be just doing this half-assedly. Oh, we're both older now, so it'll be kind of fair. No, you're both older. You both have a lot more to fucking lose. You should be getting punched in the head at 40 anyways. And just because it's another 40-year-old doesn't mean it's not a fucking horrible idea. This is stupid as shit. I remember some moron once brought it up elsewhere once. It's like, this is a dumb idea. Bellator does this shit. We've seen it happen with, you know, you want a whole bunch of fights like Ken and Hoyce, where you're just watching two sad sacks of shit go at it, and you're just praying somebody gets hurt by an illegal nut shot so they don't sustain long-term damage. Fuck that shit. Vitor, just, I hope you've saved your money, because if you haven't, you're a dumbass, but it doesn't matter. He's got enough name that he can just open a gym and do autograph signings or something. No.
Do you think Bellator would go after him?
Fuck yeah.
Couldn't Vitor fight, you know, Chael or Vanderlei?
No,
or...
you know exactly who he'd fight. He'd fight the one guy that Bellator loves more than anyone, King Mo. That's exactly who they would have him fight. Or maybe, Fyodor. Yeah, that'd be a fight.
That would be interesting. Okay, so maybe, probably just one more fight for Vitor Belfort, and then he'll hang him up. In the semi-main event, Mauricio Shogun Hua defeated Jean Valente by TKO with punches at 59 seconds.
I think this could actually be a co-main event. It's close to a co.
You're hard to judge sometimes.
I am.
Mostly, this fight was mostly standing, with Shogun having more output and finishing Valente. He basically was the more active guy. Valente ended up against the cage after a head kick and just took a bunch of shots before it was stopped. Interestingly enough, this is the third straight win for Shogun, which is sort of impressive in the light heavyweight division, the way that division looks right now. He was ranked sixth before this fight. I think Valente was 12th. So Shogun could be in the top five of the light heavyweight division after this fight. It's possible. Thoughts on the fight and possibly what's next for Shogun?
Yeah, it's. I mean, Shogun got the win. It was a really good fight. It was exciting. It was fun to watch. Both guys just stood and traded. Shogun just was simply a more fearsome striker. He hit harder, and he was willing to let his hands go more. He took a couple of shots that I thought may have been the end for him. I don't totally trust his chin, but you know, again, to his credit, he didn't go down. He stayed in it. Volante's not a joke. He's a top 10 guy, I think, top 10-ish guy. And Shogun beat him, and you know, like you said, he's three in a row at light heavyweight. You know, given the fucking Jimmy Manoa is like number four or something, I think Shogun's right there. He would obviously probably need one more win, but with one more win, especially if Daniel Cormier is a champion, I could see that. At least it'd be kind of a fresh matchup at light heavyweight. So yeah, go for it. Have him fight the winner of whoever wins the main event on Saturday.
Oh, Corey Anderson,
yeah,
and Manoa.
Yeah,
that would make sense. I mean, right now ahead of him, number five is Bader, who's probably signing with Bellator by
or he's signing with Vivid Videos.
Yeah, like Bader, like thinks he's funny, but I'm not sure that he is at all.
I have a feeling that like Bader's humor moves more on the scale towards rapey than funny. I just get that impression from him.
But, even the name of his show is, like, not, like, clever. Like, Master Bader's Tip.
Oh, yeah. It's the first thing everybody said when they saw his name. Hey, Master Bader. Like, he's probably heard that since he was in third grade, because it's a third grade level joke. Like, that's as good as it gets for old Darth Bader.
But, like, you know he's trying to... Whatever, he's probably like 34 now. He's getting a little older. He's trying to make a name for himself because he's always been this quiet guy who had nothing to say, and now he's looking around. He's like, I don't have a lot of time left. I got to try and get a deal between Bellator or UFC and make some money now. But it's like the stuff is just so dumb and not clever at all that I hope it doesn't help his cause.
It's stupid as shit, but here's the thing. It will help because... Anything
if he gets, like, an extra $50,000 a fight because of that, like, fuck off.
If he gets an extra $5,000, he's doing something, which is more than somebody like Jimmy Manoa or Corey Anderson or Jean Valente or even, to a degree, Shogun are doing. Like, at least he's doing something.
He's trying.
Yeah.
It's just bad.
Like, in sports, if a guy tries, that really is half the battle.
True.
You know, you can only just try, and then if you're good, then you become a megastar. But there are so many dullards out there that if you're a dullard who's willing to talk in front of the camera, you're ahead of the game.
Okay.
I'm calling him a dullard. A rapey dullard, apparently.
But anyway, ahead of Shogun, if you take Bader out, is Manoa, Glover, Gustafson, and Rumble. All guys who have, except Manoa, obviously, but... Rumble, Gustafson, and Teixeira have all had title shots recently, fairly anyway. I mean, Shogun would be a fresher matchup. With one more win, I could see him being the next title shot, in theory. Unless it's Jones. They're probably not going to throw him in there with Jones again, but...
I feel like if Jones I mean, honestly, if Jones wins, it doesn't really matter. It's just a whole bunch of guys that he's already beaten. I mean, good gosh, are they going to really do, like, Corey Anderson versus John Jones? Fucking hell. I mean, god damn, that'd be fucking awful.
I think Jimmy Manuel said he could knock out John Jones.
Oh, I'm sure he thinks that. But, maybe they just, we all just need to be patient and remember that the great Mika Shcherbinov is going to get that shot there. Now he's got his new dinner table deal.
Yes, he actually just signed a fight, too, on that show with Gustafson, I think. I think he's fighting the guy who shouldn't have been fighting all those times and fought three times while he was under suspension. So that'll be good. Yeah. Anyway, prior to the Shogun, when we had Edson Barboza versus Benal Dariush, Barboza won by KO at 3:35 of the second round with an unbelievable flying knee that you need to go out of your way to see. Dariush was pretty competitive on the feet, and I had him winning the first round, and most of it was all standing. So Dariush looked very good and competitive with one of the best strikers in the entire division until he got drilled with that flying knee in the second. He was kind of going in for, I think, a takedown, and Barboza just timed it perfect, like flew up into the air, like 3 feet up into the air and just drilled him with this knee that knocked him out cold. Definitely highlight reel stuff that you should try and find if you haven't seen it already. This is three straight wins for Barboza with victories over Anthony Pettis, Gilbert Melendez, and Dariush. A very, very impressive run for Barboza here.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that is always right there, but never seems to get over the hump. But then you see, like, he's got three wins in a row, and, like, in my mind, he just lost his last fight, because I always think of him as the guy that, when he gets real close to the big show, he falters. But, you know, those are three real good wins in a row, and they've been impressive wins, and obviously the knockout of Dariush is all-time highlight reel stuff for anyone else, not for Barboza, because Terry Adam will forever be that one. But still, he went out there and he beat Dariush. Dariush did better than he should have on the feet, except for I really thought a lot of that was simply the better striker in Barboza, gauging the distance and timing. And he was just uncorking those leg kicks at will, and they were slamming into Dariush's legs unchecked. And the knee, I mean, there's nothing else you can say about that thing. It was one of the most beautiful knees you'll ever see. It's also like Exhibit A in the case to make the sport illegal, because how do we allow a sport where you can do that to a human being in front of thousands for money? Like, we're a really weird culture. We have not evolved past what the gladiators of Rome were. We're just like, we're not murdering people, but we're really fucking close. Like, if Dariush had died, people would not have been like, oh, I'm never going to watch this again. They would have been like, oh, damn, I guess that happens every once in a while.
Yeah, after thousands of fights, they probably would be. What do you see next for Barboza? I mean, obviously he's sort of in the mix at lightweight. There's a few guys ahead of him. Obviously Khabib and Ferguson are kind of tying things up. And then Eddie Alvarez is scheduled to fight Dustin Poirier next. I mean, you'd like to see Barboza fight one of those three guys in theory, but who knows when that's even going to potentially happen based on the scheduling and everything.
Yeah, to me it all comes down to basically when is Conor going to fight?
Right.
It won't be in June. I guarantee it. But whenever he fights, like, if he was to fight in July, that to me would say they'd probably hold off either Ferguson or Nurmagomedov, or probably Ferguson, for the title shot. And so I would just have him fight, if that comes to pass, I'd have Barboza versus either Ferguson or Nurmagomedov, or else, it's lightweight, there's just so many dudes, there's probably like 20 guys are all roughly around the same skill level at that weight class. Off the top of my head, those guys you just listed, not Poirier, I don't really know where Poirier's coming from and all that. Like, I know he's had some wins, but I don't know. Maybe have Barboza fight Michael Johnson. There we go.
Okay. Yeah, that works. I think they fought before.
I feel like they probably have, but I don't know. I just was looking at stuff, and like, as I was kind of doing basic prep for tonight, for once, And it was like Risa Madati had beaten Michael Johnson. I'm like, what the fuck? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, Johnson did beat Barboza by unanimous decision back in 2015, but they can run it back.
Was that in like a December show?
February of 15. Bigfoot versus Mir.
Oh, that fucking show.
Memories, huh? Okay, prior to one of the best knees you'll ever see in your life, we had Ray Borg versus Juicier Formiga. Borg defeated Formiga by unanimous decision 29-28 on all three scorecards. Competitive fight. Borg kind of just won it in the latter rounds, I felt like. He did really well kind of everywhere, I felt like, against Formiga, who was third-ranked, you know, flyweight in the world going into this fight. So after the fight, Borg asked for a title shot against DJ next. I don't see him getting it. He probably needs another win, but good win for Borg against, you know, a really top elite flyweight.
Yeah, the signature win of Borg's career for sure. Juicy Formiga is, you know, a stud, especially on the ground, and Borg more than held his own. It was one of those fights where it wasn't like particularly exciting or memorable, but it's also because of its placement on the card. You don't really think of it immediately, but in reality, this is a real high-level fight. This was every bit as big a fight as, you know, Barboza's fight. In fact, rankings-wise, far more important than really anything on the show. So for you know, Borg to do that, I think this is the last fight in his deal, too. So he really timed it well. You know, he called out the champion. He did the right thing. I don't know who else. I mean, the only other person left for him to, like, probably fight around that level would be, like, I don't know, Joseph Benavidez, but that's a lost cause because you don't want Benavidez to keep knocking people off. Cejudo and Little Pettis are going at it soon. He could fight one of those two. Or else, you know, I mean, Wilson Hayes and Mighty Mouse are fighting next month, I think it is. I think it's next month in Kansas City or May. Maybe Borg is the guy. I mean, it's fucking flyweight. It's not like anybody gives a shit about drawing. Nobody's going to draw anyway, so they pretty much just do pure sports build for that division. We see how exciting it is. So maybe he will get a title shot. He's kind of like process of elimination. He's the only guy left that DJ hasn't beat.
Yeah, I mean, I could. It's weird because Benavidez is in a tough spot because he's gonna. Nobody besides DJ can beat him. So who does he fight next? Could be Borg, just because Benavidez doesn't have anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, who else? I mean, he's got to fight at some point. I mean, it, from a matchmaking standpoint, like if you're the matchmaker, do you want to knock Borg off? Or do you think Borg's got a chance and Benavidez might be getting old and this 23-year-old kid can beat him? I don't know.
I would risk it only because, like, in a normal division, you would say maybe it's worth it. Benavidez is, like, one of the – probably the second biggest star in the division. This is a chance for a guy like Borg to really cement his name. He could easily beat Benavidez. But he could also easily lose, and given that this is a pure sports building division, you don't gain any credibility or name recognition by beating anyone. So he's really got nothing to gain at this point by fighting Benavidez, especially, you know, having just beat Formiga. So yeah, I don't know. Just he can fight anyone. It doesn't matter. Maybe schedule him with Ian McCall and see if that ever happens.
I mean, I would see Sergio Pettis getting the title shot if he beats Cejudo. I mean, it almost seems like that fight's made for that reason, you know?
Yeah, if Pettis beats Cejudo, I think he would for sure get a title shot. And you know what? He would earn it, too. So, sure. We will wait and see how things fall out. Shakeout, I don't know.
Betch Kohea and Marion Renault went to a majority draw. Scores were 27-29 and 28-28 on two cards. Essentially what happened was Kohea won the first two rounds, then got obliterated in the third, like, bad. Like, I think all the judges scored at 10-8. So that's what led to the draw. She had two rounds, and Renault had the one round, but won by, you know, a scorecard of 10-8. The highlight for me was Betch dancing afterwards, acting like, don't know if she thought she won or if she was partially unconscious or what that dance was at the end of the fight, but she kind of like swivels her hips and then stuck her ass out. It was like, you just got your ass literally.
That's called dancing, Mr. Flash Dance.
For 5 minutes. I'm not a big dancer, but it didn't seem like the appropriate dance at the appropriate time.
Yeah, it's bad. She's in Brazil. She's feeling it. She thinks she just won the fight. I can understand.
She got wrecked. She probably had, like, looking at her eye, I thought she had a broken orbital. Like, it was that, like, puffy, big, deep bruise that immediately comes out like something broke in your face.
Well, you know, maybe she just understands the game because look at this. People are talking about her ass and her dancing. They're not talking about anything else she's going to do. Like, I don't remember jack shit she did in the fight other than remarking that she fights exactly like Chris Lieben. So, you know, she's doing her thing and whatever. Any historical standard, that's how the fight would be scored. That is a kind of a draw fight. But I think with the way that they're liberally using the 10-8s now in Brazil, even though they didn't adopt any of the other regulations, was going to be liberally applying 10-8 rounds. And given some of the other rounds in this show that they did give a 10-8 to, I think that Renault has a very strong case for a 10-7 round in that third round, just when you compare it to every other round, which, honestly, this is going to be one of the problems going forward, because you create a more liberal usage of 10-8, which they should, it then, I think, invites a more liberal usage of 10-7, which they should, because clearly not all, you know, you're the 10-8s, like I said, in the rest of the card, were not even close to this. Like, this was just a fucking devastating round in the third there, and to the point where Betch could have been finished and definitely looked hurt. So, but, you know, they gave it a draw, and I can see it, and I can also see if I'm Betch saying, hey, I know I was getting pounded on the last round. I also knew I was up on the scorecards. I stayed my guard. I kept things going. You know, I just knew I had to survive, so I didn't worry about doing anything else. I didn't make any stupid mistakes because I was just assuming I'd coast to the victory. So, but anyway, they get a draw. We get to see a draw. That's like the second majority draw in the past 4 or 5 months. That's weird.
It's a new cool thing. Can you think of any fights off the top of your head that had a 10-7 round? Like across the board that way? Because, like, I'm having trouble coming up with
one. Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard may have had it in that first round of their second fight when Gray dropped him like 3 or 4 times. Like, I know for sure I said that had to be a 10-7, and I'm pretty sure one or two judges did score at 10-7.
It's just so hard to come back from that. Like, maybe really you shouldn't should be. Maybe you shouldn't be. But, like, if you even, like, win, if you win the next 2 rounds solidly, you lose.
Yeah, again, the only reason I would use 10-7 for this fight is because they're applying 10-8s more liberally, and it's only fair because this was more damaging than the new 10-8s, even though by the old standards, this would just be the clearest example ever of a 10-8. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that at least, I'm glad the judges at least recognized that this was not like the other round and they did the right thing.
I was actually fairly surprised would probably be the best word with like the Brazilian, the judging down there. Cause a lot of times some of the decisions you're left scratching your head cause they can favor the Brazilians, but this show didn't really seem to have that issue as much as shows in the past, which maybe, I don't know. I don't know why that would be, if they changed something or if it was just a fluke, but it's in the back of my mind, I always feel like there's hometown favoritism on a lot of these Brazil shows.
It's a fluke because those referees, that one female referee was just about the most fucking horrible referee that the sport has ever seen. I thought she was blatantly favoring the Brazilians at points. Like, there was one fight when it was a Brazilian versus a non-Brazilian, and the Brazilian was on top of him inside the guard doing nothing. And to the point where, like, even I'm like, where the fuck is a stand-up? And I think the commentators even kind of made an offhanded remark, like, she's really giving him a lot of time to work here. It's like, yeah, that shit should have been stood up. But, I mean, she was the story of the show. I mean, the one fight when the fucking, the Honey Yaya fight, when he had the accidental headbutt.
The Soto, yep.
Yeah, and, you know, she, like, I think that was the fight where Soto then grabbed, like, a guillotine or something after she had said, like, stop, stop, stop. But she was, like, asking them to stop. Like, they'll, yeah. the real referees jump in there, grab you, separate. She was like, stop, stop. And, like, she kind of, like, waved her hand in front of it. Like, you would do, like, if two dogs are fighting, you'd be like, stop, guys, stop. Like, you don't want to get in the middle of it. And I'm like, bitch, no offense, not be misogynistic. I say it to a man, too. Herb Dean. I don't know why I pick on Herb. Get in there and stop it. That's your job. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah, I remember that vividly, too. It was the Soto-Yaya fight. They clashed heads, and I think she was going to stop it because of the headbutt, and Soto was, like, immediately bleeding from it. But then he grabbed a guillotine, and then they literally, like, I want to say rolled around, but rolled around on the mat for 10 seconds while she kind of half-assed tried to stop it. It was like she thought she saw a headbutt, and then they kept fighting, so she, like, second-guessed herself.
Well, that's
and then decided, like, then decided. Oh yeah, it was a headbutt. I'm going to stop him. It was not a good look. No.
Like it looked to me like, I think ultimately she wanted him to stop. She just didn't have control of it.
Mm.
But instead, it came across like she said stop, which by every single rule ever in refereeing means you stop. It doesn't matter what happens afterwards. A referee cannot change their mind. You say stop, it has to be a stop, even if you see something else that's off because. One guy could have just been like, all right, I got to stop now, and then he gets caught in a guillotine or something like that. Mm. But I think it was more like it came across in real time like she was like, stop, and then let him go, and then like she saw like a break in the action, and she was going to stand him up. But it clearly wasn't because Yaya had just escaped a guillotine. And I'm watching this going, bitch, you've made the decision, and you're letting a guy take more damage because you don't have the cojones, or however you say it in Portuguese, balzo, to get in there and stop it. This is horrible. Like, you're incompetent at your job. It's like a cop yelling, freeze. And if the guy keeps moving at you with a knife, he's just like, keep freezing. Freeze. Please freeze. Oh, okay. And then the guy turns around and runs away, and then you shoot him in the back. Like, no, you're doing your job wrong.
In that fight, we might as well just talk about that right now. Soto defeated Yaya by unanimous decision, 29-28, and then 29-27 on two cards. That was the fight where Soto bled everywhere. I started watching the show when it was probably almost over, and I think I even said to you, God, the mat is bloody. Like, that was the first thing I noticed. He was bleeding like a faucet from that headbutt. It was like kind of near the temple and the hairline. A lot of blood. But Soto looked good against Yaya, who is known for his ground game. And Soto kind of dominated him in the third round on the mat, I thought.
Yeah, Yaya blew his load in that first round for sure.
He was tired, yeah.
Yeah, he came out there, he was striking more. He had said to the commentator, he's like, this is my game plan. I'm doing this on purpose. Soto said it threw him off. It's possible that Yaya just, you know, he's not a striker and he's never been a striker. He just may have tired himself out doing that because it's not what he's used to with his body. Or he's hurt, not in shape. They kept talking about how hot it was in there, although he is Brazilian, so he should be used to it. Soto even actually said, like, it's hot as shit in here, guys. Like, I can't do this. Soto held his own on the ground there in the third round. But it was all because Yaya was tired as hell. Like, you could just see him moving in slow motion. Like, he was, like, underwater the way his movements were. So, you know, look, being in shape is part of the game. And sometimes you beat the other guy into tiredness. So, good for you, Joe Soto, you former world title challenger.
Alex Oliveira defeated Tim Means by submission with a rear naked choke at 238 of the second round. Oliveira basically got his revenge for the illegal knees thrown by Means in their first fight a few months back. Oliveira showed some good wrestling, good win for him. You got anything on that one?
I thought Oliveira looked like a stud in this fight. Like, okay. He was just like, Means is not a joke. Means like a grinder kind of guy that can make people look bad. And Oliveira just took him apart. He just looked totally on a different level. Best performance of Oliveira's career for sure.
Kevin Lee defeated Francisco Trinaldo by submission at 312 of the second. Another case of the biggest win of someone's career, the biggest win for Lee by far. He showed good wrestling and dominated on the ground after I thought he lost the first, but he landed a good shot in the second and then just took it to the mat and got the quick submission.
Yeah, Lee's one of those guys where I think it's like his fourth or fifth win in a row. Which is the only reason, because like when after the fight, he starts calling out Khabib. I'm like, who the fuck are you going to call out Khabib? Are you serious? And then I look at Mike, oh, he's got a bunch of wins in a row. I guess he thinks he's really good, because I'm like, I can barely remember who Kevin Lee is. Like, if you told me to pick him out of lineup, I would have been like, I have no fucking clue who you're talking about here.
Even though he's the Motown phenom. How dare you?
He's only 24, which is crazy, because he looks way older than 24. He looks like an old 30. Like a 30-year-old dude who's been through some wars, maybe worked in a factory for a while or something like that. He just looks old and tough. But he got the win, and he went to Brazil, and he choked a dude out. So, you know, and he just power-choked him, dude. Just fucking forced that choke on him. So good for him.
Yeah, Lee's 8-2 in the UFC.
How the fuck did he have 10 fights and made no impact in life?
Because he beat Jesse Ronson, Michelle Prezeris, and James Muntasri. And, you know, I mean, that's why. I mean, it takes a while for some of these guys. I just know the one thing, he's on Twitter a lot. I do know that. He rubs some people the wrong way there, but it's not making enough of an impact by any stretch.
Well, you're more active in the Twitterverse than I am. I don't really... I understand how to, like, shout shit into the universe, but, like, interacting and listening to stuff, no. I see what's trending. I try to make a joke about it, and then I go about my day.
Yeah, generally I'll scroll through to get news, because stuff comes up there pretty quick. But like, people put stuff out there before an article or something's fully written. I like unsubstantiated news. Sergio Moraes versus Davi Ramos, boring fight. I mean, this is your kind of, I want to say, standard jiu-jitsu guys trying to do kickboxing, but that was kind of my take on it.
That's pretty much what it was. I thought Sergio Moraes should have won that fight. I mean, Davi Ramos was coming in on short notice, making his UFC debut. He's still relatively new to MMA in general, and he's going to, you know, Davi Ramos is a world champion grappler in his own right, same with Moraes, but Moraes is just bigger and in better shape, and he's way more experienced in MMA, and he's the one that needed to make a statement, and he didn't. They just did pity-pat for 3 rounds.
Then we had Michelle Prezeris defeating Josh Berkman by submission. It was a north-south choke at a minute 42 of the first round. Prezeris just wrecked Berkman with a punch early, got on top, and locked in the submission. After the fight, Josh Berkman retired, then changed his mind, saying he would take another fight outside the UFC.
Yeah, I don't care about Berkman. I don't really care about this fight, other than we saw a north-south choke, which I can't remember the last one I saw in MMA. You see it in jiu-jitsu every once in a while. Marcelo Garcia was a god at it, but you just never see that happen in MMA. But Prezeris, he just forced that shit, and I think it's why that Berkman was out of it, because Prezeris just beat the shit out of him. He's just a younger, this is kind of the theme of the show. The younger dude beat up the old guy who's got a bit of a name, but is just really not long for the sport.
Yeah, Prezeris is just, like, too short for that division. He's 5'6", fighting at 155. He's one of those guys who looks not clean.
He's using steroids.
Yeah, I think.
Allegedly.
Looking at him, and he is 35, and his nickname is the Tractor. I don't know how you say that in Portuguese.
I mean, what's with the Portuguese, the Brazilians, and their weird names? Like, you got Toquinho, you got Tree Stump, you have Tractor. Like, do they just, like, not have very many, like, do they just have, like, this litany of names for stocky powerhouse guys? Like, we call them, like, Spark Plug or something. Tractor, I guess I could see. I don't really think of Brazil as having Tractors, but I guess they do.
Probably. I mean, this would be a good bit for Chael Sonnen.
Yeah. He would go. He'd probably go more racist than I would, which is saying something.
If he thought it would make him a buck, he would. One other fight worth noting from the weekend?
Exploit his dead daughter, his stillborn child. Yeah.
I don't even know how that helps you make money, but whatever. That bratty Mackenzie Dern beat Catherine Roy by unanimous decision at the last Legacy show on Friday night. I watched the fight. My initial impression was that, I mean, Dern essentially dominated the fight. She was fighting someone who was 1-0, also not real experience in the MMA. But to me, it looked like she was trying to get some cage time in. Like, she was on top. She had her mounted. She had opportunities to finish. And I just didn't feel like she was going for it because maybe she just wanted to get some rounds in.
So you get access?
Yeah.
You have TV?
No. Comcast or Xfinity, whatever
really?
The hell it is.
I have saying. Fucking Xfinity. Yeah. I don't get access. Was out of my package, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you get it? Did you get HBO?
No.
Okay, yeah.
I have a password for it. I stole it, but yeah. I only saw the highlights of this. I think that maybe during Wanda Cage time, but she still should have finished her. You know, winning a fight is more impressive than anything. The highlights I saw, Dern was doing some striking. It looked okay, but there's also times like she fell on her ass and she was striking. Just little things were very amateurish, getting her takedown stuffed here and there against somebody that really is the definition of just a tomato can feeder. Dern thinks she's going to be in the UFC by the end of this year. She might make 115 pounds first and, take it your weight cut seriously. Otherwise...
Yeah, I mean, she missed weight again. I think she missed by 5 pounds. She weighed in at 120. But
she weighed like 121 something before, and then she had to re-weigh herself.
Well, her first fight, I think she made weight. She made 115.
Yeah.
And she didn't look drawn. She looked fine. Like, I don't think she's taking this that seriously. It reminds me a lot of Cejudo when he was starting out. Cejudo missed weight, I don't want to say constantly, but he was fighting on smaller shows and missed weight a bunch. It's like they're just trying to get a little experience and aren't really putting that much effort in, I don't think, because in both cases they think they just know they're going to win the fight based on their dominant aspect of the game, and they know the fight's not going to get canceled because they're the biggest names on these shows.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's very well maybe what her thought process is, and if that's the case, she's really doomed because she's obviously a jiu-jitsu stud or whatever the female equivalent is of stud.
Slut?
It doesn't really work that way. She's a jiu-jitsu slut. But she's not showing it in these fights. And, I mean, she did pull off the omoplata submission last time with the choke. But I don't think that I don't think she's athletic enough to really dominate like she thinks she can in MMA. Like, Cejudo, you see a lot of those type of guys, he's a really good athlete. He's a physically imposing guy. She's not. She's very technical, but technique can get overwhelmed in MMA real quick. And, you know, it's the reason why somebody like Paige VanZant, for all of her many, many faults, because she's aggressive and just goes for it, she does better than she should. She punches above her weight. I feel like Dern is somebody that may punch below her weight for a long time because she's just, I don't think she has a mean streak in her. I don't think she's a natural fighter. And we're getting to the point now with MMA, women's MMA especially, that they're finally breaking free of really good athlete or really good technique. And you got to have that third dimension, that ability to just grit down and fight that we're seeing. And, the men have had that forever. And I don't think Dern has it. So I think that she'll be a gigantic bust. No pun intended, although that kind of works too.
There was, at certain points in that fight when I was watching it, I noticed like it almost looked like she was smiling. And the first person I thought of when I saw that was Paige VanZant. I'm like, I don't like that. Like, why are you smiling right now? Like in the middle of striking, like she, it appeared like she was smiling. Maybe she was just had her mouth open because she was breathing heavy or something. But it immediately reminded me of VanZant.
Yeah, that's not always the. If her career is as successful as VanZant, then she's had a good career.
True.
We
could all be so lucky.
Yeah, if I could only get by on my looks. I've tried, damn it. Oh, how I've tried, but it just won't happen.
Today on Instagram, a good place for you to maybe post some pictures of yourself, get yourself out there a little more. Anderson Silva called out Michael Bisping and Nick Diaz. For a fight at UFC 212. I don't think he meant like a handicap match. I think he meant one or the other at 212. Obviously, Bisping's kind of tied up with George St. Pierre, so Diaz seems like the more likely option. Do either of these fights make sense or interest you at all?
They don't really interest me, but they do make sense. If you're Anderson, yes, a title shot makes the most sense, duh. Otherwise, Nick Diaz, that's a really good fight for Anderson. It's a, you know, a big name. It's somebody that he should be able to beat. And if you're Nick, you know, knowing the way that the Diaz brothers work, I can see Nick for sure wanting that. That's a big payday, chance to avenge a loss. So I can actually see that happening. I think that might be the fight to get Nick off his ass.
There's something intriguing about Nick Diaz in Rio de Janeiro fighting in that crowd, booing up and even flicking them off.
Oh, no. That's a horrible idea. Nick's going to die.
You don't think he'll respond well to that?
I don't think the Brazilians will respond well to him. Brazilians are fucking crazy. I just watched a fucking clip today of a soccer match in Brazil where, like, randomly, like, one player had a cheap shot on another one, and so the other one responded by doing a giant jumping flying sidekick to the guy with his cleats, which I've actually seen in soccer before, which is an odd thing to say. And then this led to, like, both the benches clearing, and the players started fighting. Then fans from the stands start jumping onto the pitch, and they all started fighting with each other. At one point, they were doing like a tug of war battle with a banner of one of the clubs, I think. And then one of the fans just said "fuck it" and ran over and just started beating the shit out of people. And they ended up stripping one guy down to his underwear as they were soccer kicking him in the head over and over again. Like, the only fans that are worse and scarier than Brazilians are Mexicans.
I really get into sports.
Don't go to Mexico if you ever watch sports. That's a horrible, like, it's one of those things where the whole world looks at Mexico and goes, you guys are out of your fucking mind. Like, they're the ones throwing urine, cups of urine on people, throwing human shits at them, vomiting on them. Like, you do not want to go down to Mexico. That is a scary fucking place.
Yeah.
They have nothing to live for, apparently. That's how this shit happens.
You'll have to do a show with my brother sometime. He's lived in Mexico for 2 years. Yoel Romero said he wants an interim title fight with Anderson because he has beaten everyone else in the division and doesn't want to wait for the winner of Bisping and GSP.
Yeah, there we go. That's what we need. More fucking interim titles.
Do you think at this point in time, Yoel would just destroy Anderson?
Yeah, he'd murder him. I mean, fucking Yoel's like Chris Weidman, but only more athletic and a heavier hitter. Like, that would be a bad fucking fight for Anderson. It would be death. There's no way in shit they can make an interim title for that division, though. Not if Bisping's actually actively fighting with his championship still. Like, this isn't like Conor where you can be like, look, whatever, like, the guy said he's taking some time off. Bisping's like, no, fuck you. I'm out there promoting fights. I want to fight. I'm ready to go. I have a fight signed. You can't sign a title fight and then have an interim title. Well, I guess the UFC could do it, so maybe they will fight for interim title.
That would be something else. It would be kind of a silly fight for Anderson, I think. I'd like the Diaz fight better for him, but Yoel's calling him out. Everybody wants to fight Anderson Silva when he's 40 years old. So if you had to guess how much money the UFC has spent on lobbying against the expansion of the Muhammad Ali Act, what would you guess? This number came out today.
Let's see. It would be federal lobbying. It would be some, but they wouldn't be doing a ton. I mean, it's not like it's a real big – it doesn't come up a lot. That said, it's so important to the company, so I'll go with $2.5 million.
Oh, yeah. You're way over. $420,000.
Fuck me. I was going to say something in the $100,000, like a couple hundred thousand, but like the way you said it, I'm like, oh, it must be really big. I'll go with $2.5 million. Just make up some bullshit crazy number. Okay, $400,000. That sounds about right, actually.
Now, why would they bother spending the money on this?
Because in theory, if the act gets applied to mixed martial artists, it will invalidate all the contracts that the UFC has with fighters.
Right, but, I mean, is there potential of it even happening, considering, you know, the shape Congress is in and who's in office right now?
Yeah, there's always a chance. Here's the thing.
You think?
It's one of those minor bills that nobody in Congress is going to really... Like, it's not a partisan issue. No, this is not going to be something where people have, like, an ideological concern about whether this should be applied or not. Like, yeah, there may be a tiny little tinge of that, but nobody gives a fuck. This is not right-to-work states and shit like that. It's the Muhammad Ali Act, and we want to just protect fighters, and it's something that gets thrown on an omnibus bill or they get horse-traded, and one or two senators make it their pet project. McCain gets a stick in his ass about it or something, and all of a sudden, like, a bunch of senators who think that they're, you know, that they're doing the right thing. This, oh yeah, that sounds good. We can't let these guys be enslaved to these contracts. We've seen how boxing promoters abuse fighters and blah blah blah. And this gets passed, and then the UFC's done. So if you're the UFC, you know, $400,000. Even if $400,000 doesn't really do a lot to sway people, $400,000 keeps your name in there, and it allows you to really monitor shit, and keeps you appraised of what might happen, and allows you to head things off at the pass. And for a company that's worth $4 billion, $400,000, that's well worth the money.
Yeah, I mean, I might have it wrong too, but my basic understanding of the Ali Act was that basically the promotions, whether it's UFC, Bellator, or World Series of Fighting, I don't know why I even bother thinking of them.
Or Fister Fighting.
Yes, Fister Fighting. Essentially, they've got to open their books to the fighters and let them know what kind of revenue they're earning from the events. Obviously, the gate is already released, so you're more talking like pay-per-views, and maybe TV deals. Like, the fighters should get a cut of the TV deals based on, I don't know how it would work, because the UFC and boxing are so vastly different in how they both operate. But, I mean, that's the basic gist of it, right?
I'm pretty sure there's a provision in there where a fighter can't be held to a contract for more than like 18 months or three fights or something like that. Like, there's something that limits the length of and duration and number of fights that a promoter can have with a fighter, and you can just immediately see where, like, you know, that made Conor McGregor a free agent pretty quick. If you're the UFC, it makes sense back in the day when promoters were just actual promoters; they weren't like the UFC or anything like that. But this gets passed. The sport's dead. Like, it's just, I mean, it's not dead, but it's gone forever as far as how we know it. You're going to basically have fighters and guys like Melky Kawhi and Ali, what's-his-face, Shama Bling Bing Dong. They're going to have a lot more power, and, you know, fucking Bjorn Redney will suddenly be a power player. We can't fucking live in a world like that.
It's like Mad Max. So speaking of Conor McGregor, there's more Floyd and Conor talk going on this week. It's the story that'll never die. Last week, Mayweather was doing some kind of tour of like the British Isles or something weird. God,
I think he was in
why.
London.
Yeah, but I think he was like all over. I don't know. I don't know. Either way, he was over there in Europe, like those islands.
There's only like two of them.
I don't know. Ireland and Wales. Wait, I get confused.
Wales is part of the...
It's like religion and nationalities. I get mixed up.
You're an ugly American that doesn't know his geography.
You thought Boston was 500 miles away from Nova Scotia.
At least that are in the same ballpark.
That whole area is a lot closer to one another than me in Canada. Anyway.
Yeah, but I know where Nova Scotia and Boston are located. I don't think that Wales is its own island.
I didn't say it was its own island. Anyway, I'm being misrepresented here. He said he was officially out of retirement for the McGregor fight. Made some headlines, but I think most people kind of think Mayweather's full of shit. So he has said he is officially out of retirement and training for the McGregor fight. And there was also a report that came out, I want to say yesterday or today, one or the other, that the T-Mobile Arena in Vegas is on hold for their fight, speaking Mayweather-McGregor, on June 10th.
Yeah, I have to make the correction. Floyd Mayweather did not say he was out of retirement. The cocaine coursing through his veins said that he was out of retirement. This is drug talk. This is something in your veins making you go crazy. Yeah, fuck that. I'm out of retirement to fight this motherfucker. Like, this is stupid. It's embarrassing for everybody involved, Floyd especially. He's not, like, this is not happening. You can't just, oh, yeah, come on, Conor. Put your name on the thing. Like, he says all this, like, I want to make this fight happen. While he, like, simultaneously says, look, I've been the B fighter on a show before. Conor's just got to accept the fact that he's not a big star as me, and he's not going to get paid as much. I'm like, that's not what you say if you actually want to make this fight happen. You can't double down on the main sticking point that keeps you guys from fighting and then say, by the way, everybody, fuck that shit. I'm ready to fight. Stop with all your bullshit lying, Connor. Come and fight me. Like, you didn't resolve the main issue, you dumb shit. You fucking moron. And as far as, like, the T-Mobile arena, it's being hell. If somebody doesn't put money down, it don't mean shit. This, I guarantee you, this is like one of those things like Floyd called them and say, hey, can you guys, is that date free? Yeah. Oh, can you hold that for me? And then, oh, somebody makes a call, because who the fuck would know that that date is held at the T-Mobile arena unless they were tipped off to it?
The Flow Sports knew about it.
Gee, I wanna know. So, an institution that only made one really good decision, and that was hiring Jeremy Botter. You can only imagine what Botter must have done to get fired unceremoniously like that. So whatever. The fight's not going to fucking happen.
Okay.
I wish people would. It's just fucking stupid.
Well, I had to bring it up. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's stupid, too. I
have never wanted to see somebody get beat more than Floyd Mayweather for doing all this shit. It's so dumb. I hate it. It's like when, like, a bigger guy calls out the smaller guy for a super fight. Like, no, you don't get to make that claim. You don't get to, like, if you're Floyd Mayweather, this is your world, and it's not just your world. You're like a fucking different solar system than Floyd in this scenario here. You can't go around calling a guy a pussy and demanding he come out and fight you and all this shit when you're way ahead of him on all this stuff. You know, it's like Floyd seriously, it'd be the kind of seriously saying, come on, Floyd, do MMA. Come on, step in the cage. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. So for Floyd, the more he, you know, talks this up and tries to insult Connor, the more I'm like, you're the ultimate pussy bully. You're just like, you know, you're begging, come on, do it, fight me. You want your 50th professional fight to be over a guy who's never had a boxing match in his life. Like, what the fuck? This is so fucking stupid. God, I hope that Connor comes in there and just knocks his fucking head off with one punch. Oh, I fucking cheer for that. Maybe uppercuts him in the dick like Barboza did to Beneil Dariush.
Conor McGregor's training partner and jiu-jitsu whiz Dylan Danis has signed with Bellator. He has never fought MMA, kind of like McGregor's never boxed, but he's got that, you know, impeccable BJJ background and credentials. He plans to fight as a welterweight and then possibly later cut down to lightweight. Do you think Bellator makes sense for Danis?
Well, first of all, hey, Floyd Mayweather Jr., because I know you're listening, you're the Bellator of boxing now. You're the one encouraging guys who've never done the sport to sign and do it.
Good segue.
Yeah. Dylan Danis may do all right. Who knows? Bellator has shown a willingness to take flyers on guys like this and give them the proper matchups. Usually they fight on undercard. They have a very strong program of just signing all those, national champion wrestlers to the company. And some are doing okay, and some are Bubba Jenkins getting choked up by half triangles. And Danis is talented enough on the ground that he'll probably do okay for a bit there. That all having been said, whenever you see a guy who says, I'm going to start fighting, and eventually I'm going to go down to this weight, it's always like, I'm going to go out and get my feet wet. I'm not going to actually put my whole heart and soul into this yet, though. Because if you were, you would go down to your to the best weight possible, and you would fight at that. And it's not like one thing, you know, it's not like Frankie Edgar, where he's, you know, fighting at 155, and then everybody knows he could go to 145. If you're openly saying, yeah, look, when the competition gets good, then I'll go down a weight class. Well, that means you're not taking your opponent seriously now, and that's a recipe for disaster. So I look forward to watching Dylan Danis win a fight or two, probably look like, kind of like shit because he's not a fighter and he's got to learn how to fight, and he'll probably be a little panicky the first time he's in there. And then he'll get knocked the fuck out by somebody, and he'll probably gas real bad because he's not a fighter. And you got to learn how to be a fighter and go down to your right weight class, you dumb shit.
In upcoming fight news, we've got Frankie Edgar versus Yair Rodriguez at UFC 211, which is shaping up. I don't want to say it's a monster card as far as like buy rate goes, but that show is loaded right now. In theory, on paper, nobody gets hurt or pops for an illegal substance. You've got Miocic versus Junior Dos Santos for the heavyweight title. Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Jessica Andrade for the flyweight? What is that? Strawweight. I was rapidly going through 125, 115 in my head. Demi Maia versus Jorge Masvidal. Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier. And Henry Cejudo versus Sergio Pettis. Like, those fights could, like, any one of those fights could readily headline a Fox card, a Fight Night show. Just a really loaded card, especially with Edgar and Rodriguez added to it.
Well, fuck, every one of those fights is bigger than Jimmy Manuel and Corey Anderson.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, this is the kind of show that, like, as the fights are getting announced, and I don't know if the UFC does this on purpose. Like, I know, obviously, some cards are deliberately stacked, 205, 200, shit like that. I get it. But sometimes it seems like some cards get stacked just on accident. Like, all these guys are just ready to fight at the same time. But otherwise, I don't know why you would stack up cards like this that thick, because they have so many other shows around that time. I don't even know what they are, but I guarantee you they have, like, four more shows within a three-week period that you could spread the wealth and not hurt the pay-per-view buys at all. This is the kind of card that if you look at it, it's like, if you had a Conor McGregor fight on top or something like that, this is the kind of card that would be in Cowboy Stadium, not the Houston Reliant Center or whatever the fuck they're at. They could be going to the Houston Football Stadium there or whatever. I think that's Reliant. This is the something, Toyota Center maybe. But, I mean, look, I'm not going to complain. It's a fucking awesome card. It's going to be a great night of fights, and most of those fights look like they should deliver. And they all make sense, except for I don't understand Dustin Poirier getting this big push, but I don't understand a lot of things in this world.
Yeah, if you compare it to UFC 210, it's like, oh my God. You've got Cormier versus Johnson and Weidman versus Musasi. Two good fights, for sure. But then it's like Thiago Alves versus Patrick Cote, Will Brooks versus Charles Oliveira, and Usman versus Sean Strickland. It's like...
Ooh.
Like, that's the main card, which, that's fine. I'm okay with that as a pay-per-view card. I don't really have an issue with it. But compared to freaking 211, where you might not even get Frankie Edgar versus Yair Rodriguez on the main card, it's like, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, Edgar and Rodriguez really should be a UFC on Fox. Like, that's a title eliminator-level bout. Mm. And, you know, the last two guys to beat BJ Penn going at it type of deal. I mean, god damn, they've had the pay-per-views like UFC 208 and 209, which, granted, on paper looked better than it ended up being. And then you get 211, it's like, okay, you're going to give everybody their money's worth on that one. I don't know why. Maybe it's to, let's see, 211 would be, that's in May. So, I don't know, maybe they think they're going to get a lot of coverage on it or something. A piece of shit. Maybe they've heard Stipe's cries that he wants a bigger pay-per-view and get some money, and they're going to help him out. I don't think that's it.
I'm skeptical. Do you know what will be happening on Saturday night in Verona, New York?
This Saturday night?
Correct. March 18th, 2017.
Let's see. In Verona, New York. I don't know where Verona, New York is.
Me neither. That's why I pose this question that way.
I mean, you live in the fucking area.
So stupid.
Like, how is I presume Bellator's doing something? Or World Series of Fighting, maybe? They haven't done anything forever. I'll go with Bellator has a show.
Ah, wrong. World Series of Fighting number 35.
Fuckers!
There is a World Heavyweight title fight on the card.
They have a heavyweight champion?
Come on, what kind of...
I didn't even know they had a heavyweight division.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Oh, yeah, they did. It was like Andre Arlovsky and Anthony Johnson.
It was at their second show. Yeah, their current champ is a guy named Blagoy Ivanov. He's from...
Blagoy Ivanov. Yeah, he was the guy that beat Fyodor in Combat Sambo.
He is defending his title against Sean Jordan, who can do a good backflip.
He's got ugly tattoos and used to be like a football player.
But he hit that Shawn Michaels super kick once.
That's true.
He's got that going for him. Also on the card, there's Lance Palmer versus Andre Harrison.
Oh, okay. I know Lance Palmer at least.
Several guys with the surname Medoff.
Oh, like, of course. I wonder why that happened.
I'm not sure.
Is Ali still involved in that company?
No, they had to get rid of him. They were going to get in serious trouble dealing with him.
Well, he's still connected on some level, you know it. So that's probably why all the guys named Ali are getting fights.
Well, it's hard to be like the matchmaker and the fighter's manager. I don't know a lot about conflicts of interest, but that's kind of like the definition of it now.
It is, and it isn't. And you see...
How can it not be? Just put your guy against a guy you think he's going to beat.
Yeah.
Like, it's so stupid. And then you get a percentage of his purse on top of it. Like, what a fucking scam.
In a real, like, promotion it is, though, you do see a lot of these promoters that are putting on their own shows. Yeah. Ed Soares runs LFA. I'm trying to blink right now. Iowa ran, extreme cage fighting and all that stuff for years. So a lot of times it's just a matter of necessity. You live in an area where there aren't promoters, so these guys put on shows so their guys can get fights. But yeah, I mean, there is an odd conflict there, but
it's a little different when you have shows on NBC too. Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're a regional.
A regional show. But they are a regional show. They're fucking in Las Vegas and Russia. And apparently, occasionally, every once in a while in New York. So, I don't know. It's a real series of fighting. It's America's favorite dumb promotion.
Okay. Will you watch any of that show?
Yeah, I got nothing else to do on Friday night. As soon as you said, I just immediately got to hit record.
I think it's on Saturday.
Oh, maybe that explains why I didn't see it on Friday night schedule. I went to the 18th. That's a good day of fights, and I got fights all day.
In theory, you do. Yes. Yes, you do.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right.
Then there's also a UFC show on Saturday night. This is a Fight Pass card. Saturday afternoon?
Starts at 1:30 your time.
Okay. Anyway, will it end? Will it end in the evening? Will that be soon? When's night start?
I think
that's 5? Is nighttime 5 o'clock? 5 p.m.?
I think that the main card starts around 5:30-ish or so. So it's only got 4 fights scheduled, so it'll be over by about 7-ish.
I actually like that. I
fucking love it. I'm going to wake up and watch fights, and like the whole night will be – well, the whole night was going to be ahead of me. Now World's Fighting Fighting's on. Mm. I say that like I had some grand plans to go out clubbing or something like that. I could tell the mamacitas, Big Poppy will be around later. I'm big in the Mexican community.
So anyway, this Fight Pass show is actually Fight Night 107. It's coming from the O2 Arena in London, England. What can you say about this one? Not a whole heck of a lot. This is one of the weaker shows they've done in a while. It is a Fight Pass show. It's weird because every once in a while they seem like they want to push Fight Pass and these Fight Pass cards. They did Bisping and Anderson Silva on Fight Pass.
Anos and Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, that's true too. But I just feel like they're getting away from that now for whatever reason. It's, you know, your Derek Lewis's before they had Instagram. And now you've got Jimmy Manuel versus Corey Anderson. And it's just like, I don't see anybody buying Fight Pass for this show.
No.
Maybe it keeps your current subscribers subscribing, maybe? Like the hardcores who are going to pay for it and they're like, I guess I'll keep it. There's another live show.
I think it's kind of, there is a benefit where not everything you do has to be an out-and-out draw. Sometimes it can just be giving people value for their product. And people go, I did get the free show. And if you look at these shows as really kind of being for the Americans in a very distant second, it makes sense. Whatever TV deals they have in Europe are probably more satisfied with having a show be live in prime time over there, and we're the afterthought. And yeah. In that sense, especially when you see this show, it's just so British heavy and foreigner heavy. Well, I guess they're not foreigners. Some of them are, yeah. The Swedes would be foreigners in England. Like, there's almost, like, no Americans on this show. And that's good. You know, they got to build up their European talent. And, in days gone by, this would have been RFA number 37 or something like that. Instead, it's UFC Fight Night 107. They'll do a bigger show on Fight Passes here, I'm sure. They did 2 good, big shows last year. They've shown a desire to do that. And you basically only have to do it once or twice a year at most. Just enough that people go, okay, there's something there. And they subscribe. Because all you want to do is get them hooked. You want to get them to sign up for 1 month. Then everybody fucking forgets the thing is going. And they just get resubscribed. It's how it works. It's brilliant.
Right. I just wonder if they're going to get away from doing that based on, you know, the TV deal coming up. They want to have these bigger shows on Fox. They got to make money on pay-per-view. I just wonder if for the next year or two, these Fight Pass cards will be an afterthought and we will have some more depressing shows.
Probably. And I don't mind. I don't care. I get it. Actually, I don't pay for it. I steal it. But I share it.
With your mom?
With my fat lover. They're
that
all
could, that could be so many people.
I know. I've got a reputation. I tell you, people often think that I'm black because I love big, fat, white women. And dudes. Fat people. They all look the same at a certain weight. They really do. Kind of like retards. They all look the same. You know how old or fat they are. So, yeah. It'll be the home of foreign shows. I'm sure they got this show coming up in Japan later. They'll probably do that one on Fight Pass if they can. And yeah. I'm good with it.
Okay, so in the main event, we've got Jimmy Manoa versus Corey Anderson. Two top 10 light heavyweights, but neither of them, I mean, Manoa's pretty exciting. He's got some big knockout wins. I think he's coming off that knockout over Ovin St. Preux.
Back in October.
Yeah, so it's been 5 months since he last fought. I think he's ranked number 4 in the division now, so he another is. Knockout win, he's... He could be next in line, man, depending on how things break out. But
he's got this. He's older. I think he's kind of boring. He's never done anything to really put himself in my orbit. He's got the knockout power, but every time he stepped up to actual real competition, he's lost. Gustafsson being the biggest loss of his career. Corey Anderson, who's actually just from down the road from me, about 40 minutes away in Rockford, Illinois. Again, a guy who's kind of in the top 10 by virtue of the fact that there's just not a lot of talent at 205. It's any division where Shogun in this day and age is still in the top 5, man, who gives a shit?
I don't know.
Anybody going to watch this fight and come away going, oh, yeah, they could totally give the... I'll call it the big three if you throw in Rumble Johnson there, a run for their money. I mean, maybe Manoa, you'd trick yourself into it because of his power. But he's also like 37 years old. He's an old dude. He can't be around for a long time. I mean, goddamn, John Jones could do 5 bumps of coke and go out there and whoop Manoa's ass tomorrow.
I saw a video, I don't even know where it was. But it was John Jones riding around on, like, a mountain bike in Albuquerque, like, going up on, like, over all these rocks and dirt and stuff. Like, he's going to wipe out and break his arm. I just had this weird feeling. I don't think that happened, but I could see him not being real coordinated on a mountain bike in the foothills of New Mexico.
We should start a rumor that he hurt himself. You're allowed to do that these days. You can just make up fucking rumors about fighters and pass it off as quote-unquote news.
You can make up rumors about anything right now and make it news. I think the goal is just to get people to click on your stuff and hopefully make a couple bucks. It's like by any means necessary at this point.
Well, it's either that or somebody actually really did hear a rumor that Khabib has a disease and he's going to retire because of it.
I didn't see that one.
All the fucking out there? The MMA imports bullshit. They have a rumor says Khabib Nurmagomedov is suffering from an illness. And then they go into, he's missed weight 5 times in his life. He just had the last weight cut that he didn't do well. And his father said that he's thinking about retiring or some shit like that. I'm like, you're just making shit up. You're just fucking making it up. You're going to say it's a rumor. Or somebody else has made it up and they're dumb enough or you don't give a shit enough. And you're going to publish it. It's such an obvious fucking, like, what, he's got some sort of secret fucking, you know, Muslim diverticulitis or something, like too much hummus in his diet, and now he's sick? Shut the fuck up. Like, he missed weight, and you're just trying to make something up. Oh, maybe there's a real secret reason. Everybody goes, oh, maybe there is. That would explain it. It's like, no, he just fucking missed weight a lot.
In the semi-main event, we've got Gunnar Nelson versus Alan Jobuan. Thoughts on that fight?
I don't really care about it.
Okay.
Gunnar Nelson, to me, he showed to me that he's never going to be at that top level. And it's not his fault. It's just he's a Damian Maia 2.0.
Whose fault is it?
Well, it's just the nature of the beast. If there wasn't a Damian Maia, he'd be like the good grappler in the division. Mm-hmm. But there is a Damian Maia, and he's way better than Gunnar Nelson. And Gunnar's got nothing else that he brings to the table. He doesn't even cut weight. So, whatever. And Alan Jouban, I actually like Jouban. He's he's got an exciting style. He's a good look. He's a very good looking man. So if it goes to the ground, Gunnar wins. If it stays on the feet, Jouban wins. It'll be a fight.
Yeah, I mean, Gunnar's been good in the UFC. I mean, he's got two losses. One was a split decision to Rick Story, and then was the Maia fight. Otherwise, he's won all his fights in the UFC by submission. A lot of chokes, almost all chokes. So, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. He's still only 28, so it'll be interesting. Can you say this definitively? The best MMA fighter ever from Iceland?
Probably, yes.
I can't think of another one. So.
I think Marius Pruszynowski is Polish descent, but he's from Iceland. And a lot of those strongmen are. And,
I think
one of those guys is pretty fucking big, badass. I bet they could beat up Gunnar in a fight. Like the Mountain, he could probably beat up Conor. I think he's from Iceland. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't take that into account.
You just say pound for pound. I'm just going with the biggest motherfucker in Iceland right now.
You're right. I screwed up. Do you find it? Did we already talk about how Iceland's green and Greenland's ice?
Yep.
Brad Pickett versus Marlon Vera is a bantamweight fight on this show. Pickett is saying this will be his final fight either way. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I know he wanted to retire in his last fight. It was against Uncle Creepy, I believe it was, and it got called off. It may have been Uncle Creepy, maybe somebody else. Either way, it's supposed to be in England. It didn't happen. He had the fight with Uriah Faber, and he lost. He should be the underdog here. I hope he does. I mean, I really like Brad Pickett. He seems like a nice guy. I say that based on the fact that he kind of smiles and dances, plays up the snatch image, and sometimes brings his kids to shows. So I'm like, hey, he must be a good guy. I hope he's got enough money, because I don't want to see him get beat up a lot, and he's just been in so many fucking wars. But I think it'll probably be a good fight. That's the thing about Brad Pickett. He's had really good fights. He's an action fighter.
I always like how these Fight Pass shows, they have a main card and a prelim card, even though it's all on Fight Pass.
I fucking
love it. It's kind of weird.
I know why they do it, because they have international TV deals. But
right.
So, obviously this is airing on something like Sky or whatever in England. So sure. I got to break it up. But yeah, I broke down the card and did everything for Saturday's show. And so I'm like typing, I was like, oh yes, prelims on Fight Pass, main card. Also on Fight Pass, but we have to have a line of demarcation here just for shits and giggles. It's like the Irish, it's like English and the Welsh. They're the same place. They just have an imaginary little line, but it's all still the same.
In the opener of the main card on Fight Pass is Arnold Allen versus Makwan Amerkani. What? Anything? Featherweight fight?
In my head, Arnold Allen looked really good the last time he fought, but I can't tell you why. Looking up and down this card, there's a lot of guys who have, 7 to 10 fights, and they've been in the UFC since 2014, and they've made no impression. They're just all in this European circuit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. It's like a lot of those Asian fighters, too, where it's like they were on, the China version of Tough or something, and it's like they fought in, South Korea and the Philippines, and it's like, they could be 3-0, and I'd have no idea who they even are, because they fight a couple times a year on cards, on the undercards of shows that barely register at all. So it's a weird time trying to build guys like that, because I don't even know if they're really trying to, because the question is, can they even compete with, the Canadian, Brazilian, American fighters who have been doing it longer and have better competition? Can some guy from the Philippines, come over to Vegas and compete with, even a mid-level American fighter right now?
Mark Munoz showed that the answer is no. But it works in a weird way. It's kind of like the old school pro wrestling. They have their territories now. And they have it in Brazil. There's a lot of those guys in the last show that are from Fortaleza. They don't fight in America. They don't fight on American big shows. You don't really know who they are. You kind of know their names a little bit. Because they're Brazilian, they do have more credibility. But realistically, I think they do the right thing, which is have these guys fight amongst each other. Then they bring the best guy out of each kind of region, and they bring him to the big show and see if he can do anything.
Right. On the undercard, the biggest name probably on the undercard is Joseph Duffy. This is the last fight on his deal. He's fighting Reza Madadi. He's been talking like he wants to get out of his deal and possibly go to Bellator. Whether or not he does that remains to be seen, obviously. But big fight for him. If he wins here, he has some leverage. If he loses, we might be seeing him on Dublin shows in Bellator shortly.
Or if he wins, maybe Madadi gets angry and burgles his home.
Yeah, what was he doing, stealing purses?
So, yeah, he stole purses and got sentenced to jail, and the UFC released him, and then he got out of jail. I'm like, all right, you can come back. I'm like, wait, what? Like, cool. That shit's expensive. You can get a lot of money for those purses.
Well, who was...
You do like a snatch and grab at like a Louis Vuitton store, you could be in and out with $25,000 worth of merchandise in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think they usually like lock that shit up now, though. Like it's
they
on
do,
some sort
but here in Chicago, we have a big Louis Vuitton store. It's right on Michigan Avenue. And a couple months ago, somebody just drove their car right into the window, jumped out, and grabbed a bunch of purses and ran off.
Oh, from like the, I was going to say the mummies. What are those things called in the window? The dummies? I don't even know what they call them.
Mannequin?
Mannequin! Thank you! Holy crap. He's having a mind brain fart. Anywho, so Duffy's the main guy on the undercard. Any other fights you're looking forward to on the undercard? Timothy Johnson has a good mustache.
Ian Entwistle's got the greatest British name ever. Leon Edwards, I remember. You know, there's actually a number of guys on this card that are not bad. I think it'll probably be a good show. Usually these shows tend to be pretty freaking entertaining. I just remember that one show they had in Scotland. It was, seriously, for my money, one of the greatest shows in UFC history that nobody ever remembers. So the crowds tend to be hot. The O2 Arena's a big arena. This is a major arena in London. So maybe it won't be as hot as a smaller show would be, but I think it's a Saturday afternoon. And there's nothing else on. It's either this or NASCAR is usually on Sundays, I think. I don't really know what NASCAR's on, but I tried to watch it a little bit. And I was like, I'm impressed. I think it's really cool, like all the math and everything that goes into. Like we're gonna give you a little quarter tank less gas that'll make you faster. I'm like, oh my gosh, like they're doing all this math in their heads on the fly, but it's still just dudes driving in a circle. So since it's either that or I watch this, I'm going to watch this.
I'm just looking now. Tony Ferguson is calling out Nate Diaz.
That's a smart... I think Nate Diaz is kind of like the mini Conor McGregor. Everyone's going to call him out.
No, I mean, that fight makes sense to me. Do it. Because either way, you've got somebody for Conor to fight. Like, if Ferguson beats Diaz and can beat him emphatically, then he'll have a rightful claim to that number one position. And it gives him that rub. Like, beating Khabib, he wouldn't get that rub necessarily. And then if Diaz beats Ferguson, it just makes that title fight even more legitimate with Conor.
Oh, no, I think it's a perfect fight. I think it works for both guys, too, because even if they lose, the fight will inevitably be entertaining, just the way they match up style-wise. So I think, and you know, when you're in a fight that big, you don't, unless you get totally embarrassed, you never lose anything. Like, it's like Nate and Conor. Neither one of them lost anything in each one of their fights and they lost. So, as long as you don't pull an Eddie Alvarez and get smoked, you're good.
I can't remember if we were talking about this or not, but somewhere... I either heard this or talked about it, but the idea that the Diaz brothers never really want to be the A side, they're always looking to be that B side. Just throughout their careers, they don't want to fight somebody with less of a name than they have. And that's kind of what Nate and Nick both seem to be waiting for. But there's only so many guys bigger than them now. It's hard when there's only two or three guys more popular than you in the whole company. Like Nick is saying he would fight Bisping. He would maybe fight Anderson again. He'd fight GSP. But literally, those are the only guys in his size sort of thing that might have a bigger name than him. Some people would argue Nick's a bigger name than Bisping and Anderson right now, just coming off that, you know, the lifetime suspension for weed and everything. I think his, like, cult following is bigger than it's ever been. I only think Nate helped him become a bigger star. The same thing goes for Nate. Besides Connor, there's no real other lightweight or welterweight besides GSP with a bigger name than him. So they might be waiting a long time for fights if that's truly their mentality.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. It actually does fit with their mindset. I actually understand where they're coming from. Like, I can see them, like, I'm not going to let this guy get the rub off me. Like, I'm not going to give him the shine. I'm the star. I'm not going to let somebody make money off of me. I think that's their big thing. Don't let somebody make money off of you. But I can see Ferguson appealing to Nate because they like money, but they also do have this respect thing, and that, you know, you give them a big fight and they feel respected and then they'll take it. And so I can see Nate, especially if they give him a good payday, him and Ferguson would be money. And I mean, Nick is, both the Diaz brothers are the same way of drawing, in that you don't immediately think of them as like, I can't wait to watch their next fight. Like, Conor McGregor, like, I know it's going to be an event. George St. Pierre, it's going to be an event. The champions, you go, I'm going to watch somebody be great. The Diaz brothers didn't really, never ever truly establish themselves as great, but they have the ability, in that last week of the fight, you will be more into it than anything, because they will do something, and they will say something, and you will realize, here we go, these Cholos are going to have a real street fight. This is going to be good stuff.
Yeah, no, to me it makes more sense than the Khabib fight. And you know Nate will show up.
Oh, Nate, yeah.
Like, he's not going to show up for the fight. I mean, I think that fight alone could draw okay on pay-per-view. Just Nate and Ferguson on top. I think Nate's got a big enough name he can draw on his own. But we'll see. Maybe UFC's pissed off enough at Khabib where they bump him back and say, you got to win two fights if you want the title shot now because you fucked us over again. But we will see what happens. I know you love talking about this. There's a snowstorm headed this way. Did Chicago get hit at all? Because it wasn't on the national news.
I was going to ask if you're still alive, but apparently you are. yes. Well, Chicago was supposed to get up like 6 inches last night, and I woke up this morning, and there's like 2 or 3 inches on my car. But all that was on my car. Like, on the ground, it all pretty much was gone.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to get more snow tonight. I don't really. It's snow. It doesn't do anything. It's not like it's in New York where all of a sudden, oh, we're going to get like 6 inches of snow. And my mom's always like, oh, you know, New York, have you seen those streets? I'm like, Mom, we have narrow streets in Chicago, too. We just know how to deal with it. It's just we're not the entertainment and news center of the world. And so when, you know, what's his face, Al Roker sees snow in his own backyard, he must think, oh, my gosh, this is so big. And meanwhile, everyone in Fargo is like, really? You got 6 inches? We call that Tuesdays around here. So, like, just get lost. So, but I'm sure it'll be dangerous. I mean, goddamn, they named it. New York has their blizzards get names. They don't get names around here. I never had a blizzard with a name in my life. You kind of remember them after the fact by the year that they happened in. Blizzard of 69, 78, and things like that. Or 68 and 69, 79, something like that. But, I don't know, whatever. I hope that the whole East Coast freezes to death.
Thank you.
I stand by my statement.
I'm not asking you to rescind it. Yeah, it's funny because the storm's kind of weird. Like, it's supposed to hit Boston with, like, you know, a foot and a half of snow, then, like, Western Mass maybe with 2 feet. But the Cape where I'm at, literally my town is, like, on this borderline where it could be like 6 inches or 12. So it'll be interesting to see what we get. Then the Outer Cape is supposed to get like 1 to 3 inches. It's a weird storm where it's like 1 degree is going to make a huge difference in whether or not I go to work tomorrow or my daughter has school. So
is that because of the, I presume that's because of the ocean?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, sometimes we get hit worse than like inland a little bit because the snow kind of like blows back based on the ocean, and we can have like a few more inches of, like, they call it ocean effect snow, where the storm basically blows back after it's already gone out to sea.
They actually say ocean effect?
Yeah, that's the thing.
My whole life we've always had lake effect.
Right.
I guess it makes sense you'd have an ocean effect. It just sounds awkward to my ear. I think it's fascinating because, you know, like, I know you're within, you know, easy driving distance of Boston. You're not, like, you know, right. 5 hours away or anything like that. Well, yet the idea that they would get significantly different precipitation than you is so weird to me because, you know, like in Chicago and Milwaukee, they're mostly going to get the same type of snow, and they're farther away than you are from Boston. So that ocean there, you guys are going to have to deal with their is this going to be a nor'easter? Is that what they're going to call it?
Yeah, probably. I don't even know how they define a nor'easter because usually it comes up. I don't even know. It's coming. It's coming from the west. What's that?
I do know how they define nor'easters.
Okay.
Is Mark Wahlberg going to make a movie about it? That's it.
That could be it. But, yeah, so we're not going to get a lot of snow here, but an hour or two away, they're going to get whacked. It's funny because, like, Worcester, which is probably – it's going to be the second biggest city, maybe town in Massachusetts. But, I mean, they have Raw there a lot. They've got, like, a decent-sized arena there. They'll get literally 3 feet of snow sometimes. We won't get anything here just because of the temperature difference. And it's only an hour and a half away. It's what you can do moving inland. It's that temperate coastal climate we have here, I guess. Other stuff going on. Some guy online made a 2-hour movie of Breaking Bad. He basically spliced different scenes and different episodes to turn the, you know, 60 episodes of that show into a movie. Does that interest you at all?
It kind of does, actually, yeah. I saw this maybe like an hour or two ago. I'm like, huh. I don't think I'll ever watch it because it's still 2 hours of something a fan made. And, like, that's a long-ass time to watch a passion project like that. But maybe it's really good. Like, the creators, Gilligan, really was singing its praises. So I think it's kind of cool, and I guess they did something neat and original with it. And it's not just, like, a regular fan. Like, the guy who did it's, like, a film student at UCLA or something like that. So, like, they know what they're doing. So that sounds interesting. Again, I'll never watch it because I'm never going to be running out of things in my life to watch where that's all that's left. But good for them for doing it.
Were you a Breaking Bad fan?
Oh, yeah, I love the show.
Yeah, it's by far my favorite show ever. How do you feel about Kellyanne Conway saying microwave spy on people?
I thought I heard people joking about this, and I looked it up online. Like, I thought she said it's not like we think you were saying that your microwave is spying on you. Like, I swear that's what she actually said. Like, she was kind of like downplaying, like, we're not saying, like, we're not being crazy. I thought it was, like, her implication. Like, we're not saying your microwave's spying on you. And people were just making fun of her for it. Although she did say your microwave's spying on you. It's a hell of a microwave.
I'm trying to pull it up here. There are many ways to surveil each other, Conway told the paper. You can surveil someone through their phone, certainly through their television set, any number of ways. I think this is coming off Trump saying that Obama tapped his phones. Yeah. Do you think Obama tapped Trump's phones?
Yeah.
You do?
Actually, here's the thing. This comes out of two things. Trump saying that Obama tapped his phones, and then WikiLeaks releasing all the information showing how the CIA actually can tap you. And
sure.
I think that was an eye-opener for a lot of people. I think most people with a computer have known that stuff. Like, I know I read someone said Mark Zuckerberg puts tape over all of the cameras built into his laptops because he understands that this stuff can be done. The degree, I mean, look, we wiretapped Angela Merkel, and the chancellor of Germany there. So this stuff happens. I don't really know if Obama did or not. I will say that the only reason I suspect that it might happen is because every time one of his people says something, they're very clear with their language, which is Obama never ordered this to happen. They always use the word ordered, which to me says that they're hedging their bets, which, and honestly, that may be the case. It doesn't mean that Obama's not culpable because everybody knows, you know, don't just, you know, inculcate the president, keep him away from, put up the Chinese wall so he can't see what's going on, and wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Somebody that knows better just does it without telling him, but he's really happy that they did do it. I mean, they've even kind of, the FBI's even said, like, we were monitoring them as part of the talk with Russia or some shit like that. So either somebody knows, or they could just be hedging the bets and being like, look, we don't. They think it's possible that somebody did do it, and that's why they stress we didn't order it. Which, again, if you didn't order it, it really has nothing to do with the political side of the White House. If it was just some guy or a couple people in the FBI, for good reasons or bad, whatever, wanted to do this, suddenly it's like, hey, your guys did it. And they were like, look, we had no idea that was happening. I don't think that anybody in this day and age, Trump would, but most politicians would be smart enough not to directly order something like that to happen. But it won't matter, because if it does come out that his phones on some level were tapped or monitored, even if Obama's completely innocent, Trump wins that one. He'll be like, he tapped my phones, and somebody's going to see the government tapped his phones, and it all goes to shit. Can't be fucking around with phones. Ask Nixon about that one.
Yeah. Who the hell knows? I don't know what's going on in the world anymore.
It won't matter.
I just look at headlines.
It won't matter.
And laugh.
In a week, it'll be something else. I think everybody misses that on Trump. He never pays for any one thing because he just invents or does something new. Like,
do you think he does a lot of the stuff as a distraction from what actually is happening? Do you buy that theory, or do you think he's just erratic and all over the place?
I don't think he does this deliberately. I think that he recognizes when something works and he'll go with it. I don't think that he minds it, but I do think he just spouts off. He reads shit. And the whole wiretapping thing came from an article from Breitbart. Everyone gets to see, like, the article went live at, like, 5:30, and he tweeted at 6:30. It's like, I wonder how he found that out, you know? I don't know if he does it on purpose. I don't think that he would... I think he's vain enough that he wouldn't want to sacrifice some of his reputation to help, you know, get through real legislation. But, again, I do think that it works to his benefit immensely, and I keep saying this to people, in that... He goes out there and he's the stooge. You know, he's the guy that everybody looks. He's the shaking hand and the misdirection act. Because think about, like, all the stuff that he's said and done and all these real substantive issues that have come up. And some of them have bitten him on the ass. He got blowback on the travel ban. The Affordable Care Act deal that's going on right now isn't flying smooth. But on the other hand, nobody in the world is talking about Neil Gorsuch. That is completely fallen off all radar, which means he's guaranteed to get confirmed because there just won't be enough pressure put on the Democrats to really hunker down and fight this one. And I just see a lot of that type of stuff happening where everybody's watching him rant and rave at Alec Baldwin, and we're just going to be over here, and we're going to remove this regulation, we're going to do this tax cut, we're going to pass this, we're going to do that. And people are going to be like, wait, how did that happen? Oh, yeah, we were too busy watching the TV and being entertained by, you know, Rosie O'Donnell playing Sean Spicer.
I don't think that's Rosie O'Donnell.
No, Rosie said she wants to do it.
Oh, well, it probably is a good gig.
She auditioned for the role or did something like that. And people were like, yep, that's going to just further cement Spicer's doom. He ain't going to last long.
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell probably should be involved somehow just based on her feud with Trump. I mean, it makes perfect booking sense.
God, fuck, that was one of the greatest moments in pop culture history when he just called her fat, disgusting pig. And, like, I think he's on O'Reilly or whatever. I know he's in lots of places. And, like, they asked him about it, and he just doubled down. And that was the moment, like, when, like, I think everything changed. Because you know what? When he doubled down, he didn't get any shit for it. A lot of people were like, you know what? Yeah, she kind of is. She's kind of a fat, mean person. I understand where he's coming from there. Like, when you double down, you actually make the insult worse. Like, if you apologize, you make the insult worse because you're giving credibility to the idea that you said and did something wrong.
Sure.
So when you actually just say, no, I was right, people are like, they don't know how to react. It's Trump's entire shtick. He became president because he just said, no, I'm not going to apologize for that. People go, wait, what? But you can't talk about grabbing pussies and not go on, like, Oprah and The View and... you know, castrate yourself for the American public. Like, you can't just let this fly. You can't just do all the things he does and then react with, yeah, I said it, yeah. I totally stand behind that.
I think that moment, I think it might have been, it was one of the first Republican debates. It was one of the ones on Fox News where she asked him about calling women, like, fat, disgusting pigs, and he goes, No, that was only Rosie O'Donnell. You got like the biggest pop in like debate history, like ever. Like the crowd, like I felt it was unbelievable. And to me, that was the moment where he might have won the whole thing, because it was like it was witty, it was clever, it was funny. The timing was perfect. It was like it was the one moment where I actually liked Donald Trump for a few seconds.
And look at what he does when he says that. Look at what it does, though. It's like it'd be the most brilliant PR move ever if you do it on purpose, and maybe he did, because instead of it becoming Donald Trump is a misogynist who says bad things about women, he made sure that everybody said, no, it was about Rosie personally, and suddenly it's just somebody having a beef with another person. It's just a one-on-one fight, and then you can not like it or like it, but it doesn't point to an overall, you know, character flaw as far as how he treats women in general. Now, later comments may undermine that sentiment, but in that moment, it became Donald Trump doesn't say misogynist things. It became Donald Trump says dumb things about Rosie O'Donnell, but who cares? It's Rosie O'Donnell. Mm. It's very it works very well. I think a lot of people, if they don't replicate it on purpose, they should start really looking at it. Not that everybody should go around being crude, but there is something to the way that he handles these crises.
There's a new. Are you into anime at all?
No.
Not at all. Comics are okay, but not
I've watched anime and manga. I'm aware of them. They're within my circle, so I'm not unfamiliar with them.
Okay. Because there's a new Netflix Godzilla anime coming out. Not into it?
Nah, I don't give a shit about Godzilla and stuff like that.
I don't know. I don't know the difference.
It's not one of my nerd things.
Okay.
Like the big one out for all of them is the Ghost in the Shell coming out. That's like the big controversial one.
What is that? I've never heard of such a thing.
It's generally considered the greatest anime in Japanese history. Like, I've never actually seen it. But
what's
by
it
all
called?
Ghost in the Shell. Yeah, and they're going to do a live-action version of it. It comes out this month, and it stars Scarlett Johansson. And this is the one that got a lot of shit, because obviously in the original anime, they're all Japanese. And in case people haven't noticed, she's not Japanese. So people think,
is this the whitewashing thing?
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not really whitewashing. Like, the creator of the anime, it's an anime and a manga, he's came out and, like, said he likes it, and the character isn't really supposed to be any ethnicity in the film. So, really, her being it is fine. This isn't a real, true whitewash. But I understand why people are like, really? On the other hand, it's like, you would not have had this movie made if Scarlett Johansson was not attached to it. It would not be getting, you know, $100 million budget or anything like that if you have Lucy Liu as the main. Like, it would be fine. Maybe it'd be more authentic, even though I think she's Chinese. But, yeah, it wouldn't work. So, we'll see. I mean, it might be good. It might be bad. I don't know. It'd be better than the piece of shit Johansson's got coming out this summer.
What's that?
Oh, she's got some awful all-female comedy. Look, we're kind of being crude type of deal, and it's like a Bridesmaids 0.5, and it's got Kate McKinnon in it, who I think may be the least funny human being that's ever supposed to be funny. And I just, every time I see her doing stuff, she's just like, her whole shtick is just to make a goofy-looking face. She didn't say things funny. She didn't have any physical actress. She just does these over-exaggerated things. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what? I don't understand how this is supposed to work. I just watched Ghostbusters, and God, it was horrible.
You know what's funny? I'm so out of touch. I don't even know who Kate McKinnon is. I had to just look her up on here.
The blonde lesbian on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
And she plays Hillary Clinton very well. She did Hillary Clinton a lot during the campaigns.
Yeah, I watched some of the political stuff they were doing with Trump and everything and Baldwin, but it's like, I haven't watched, the one Saturday Night Live I watched was with Rousey, because Rousey was on it. I was just curious, and it was so bad. It's like, I haven't watched Saturday Night Live since, really, probably since, like, I was in high school.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, nobody has. Nobody's watching this thing. It's a dead show. The greatest thing that ever happened was Donald Trump, because suddenly people are watching it, because it seems relevant, because Trump doesn't understand that it's not relevant, because in his circle, it is a big deal to be made fun of on Saturday Night Live. Anybody who's under the age of 70 goes, oh, Saturday Night Live, really? Nobody watches that. I'd rather watch Mad TV, and that doesn't even exist anymore.
It hasn't existed in 15 years, probably. Yeah. What else is going on in your world? Anything?
Nope.
No, nothing.
Just literally nothing.
No stuff? No stuff this week?
Oh, there's always stuff, but...
What do you got?
I mean, my whole life is stuff. I saw some poor bastard... This is how stupid the world is, and I really... I don't know how certain people exist. They must just go around crying all the time. Like, actually crying. Because some guy, I guess he's a conservative dude, but he's on some video game website or some shit like this. I don't know exactly what it is. But he, on National Women's Day, he tweeted out, like, it was like a national, like, good things about National Women's Day or whatever hashtag. And he tweeted something like, a whole day of peace and quiet. That's all he tweeted. It's an old hacky joke. It's not offensive. People demanded, and he actually had to quit the company he was with or whatever because it was considered sexist and offensive and this, that. I'm like, holy crap. If that's what you people really think is offensive and wrong with the world, you're doomed. Like, wait until you see what they're doing over in Iran. Then you're going to really lose your mind. Like, it's a stupid tweet. It's a joke, and I think all jokes, presuming that they're, you know, intended to be jokes, should be essentially giving carte blanche immunity. But, I mean, just look at it, you go, eh, whatever. Just move on with your life. You know how much stuff is out there that I've always looked at and go, that's stupid. I don't get upset about it. I just, eh, whatever, I turn it off. It's just, it's insane. The whole world, like, all the people they're shutting down, they want to start, they're starting riots to prevent people from speaking. They're afraid of people speaking. They don't even have to hear the people speak. You know, some Milo Yiannopoulos or one of these guys, they speak in like an auditorium that's not going to be broadcast on TV. It's like 50 dorks, Republican dorks wearing ties and ugly red hats are going to hear him speak. Who gives a shit? It doesn't do anything to you. You're not paying for it. Everything goes on with life, and yet people want to stop it. I'm like, who cares? Who cares what somebody says in a classroom? Like, some guest speaker for 1 hour, one dime on a Tuesday night? And again, it's the campus Republicans. Like, there's a bunch of dorks. A bunch of virgin dorks who, you know, talk about how much they love reading the Wall Street Journal. Like, who gives a shit if they want to hear some guy speak? Even, what worst case scenario, he starts a beer hall putsch type of riot a la Hitler, and like the 50 nerds go out there, and the 10,000 social justice warriors can just beat him up. Who cares? Just let it go. It's just, the whole world's gone fucking crazy. I don't know why people like go, you have to go out of your way to see things, and people go out of their way to see something so that they can be offended by what they've seen. I don't understand that at all. We have 8,000 television channels. You have a TV from... You can literally watch any channel on Earth on your computer. Why are you watching something that upsets you? It's stupid.
There's, I don't know if they call it faux outrage, but fake outrage, for sure. I don't know if that's just because people are really comfortable in their lives and in their situations right now, so they have time for that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm not into it either. It's like the simple saying is like, I don't agree with what you say, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yes, Mr. Voltaire.
But that's like so basic, and it's like somehow that's lost on people now. Where it's like, yeah, you're going to get mad, like enraged, or like throw the trash can through the Starbucks window, or whatever you're going to do. It's like, protest. That's great. That's another form of freedom of speech, protest. But don't like fuck up other people's shit because you don't like what somebody else is saying.
I love when they trash Starbucks. It's like, you're going to find like the one company that came out publicly said, we're going to hire all the illegal immigrants and Muslim refugees we can. Throw a brick through their window. Like,
right.
Like, it's not like you're trashing a Shell station. Or like, ah, fine, you're sticking it to, you know, the oil company. No, it's people that make your $5 coffees that you drink that are weird and fruity or whatever. The term that has been used to describe a lot is virtue signaling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that's a lot of it. It's like, it's very primal. It's something you see in the wilderness. Animals are, they beat their chest the biggest, they have the biggest plumage or whatever it is. It's their way of signaling to mates or the community in general of, hey, look how important I am. I understand. I'm with you guys. It's like the only way they can feel comfortable is to make sure that the rest of the pack understand that they're with them, and they constantly have to, they constantly seek that affirmation from the pack, which I guess, again, it makes sense. It's natural. It is something, I think, ingrained within us. I think that they're in a weird pack if that's what they have to do, but if they think they've got to do it, then they've got to do it.
I mean, in a way, it could be almost like peer pressure, too. I mean,
yeah, it is.
You got to do, like, you feel the need to do what you have to do to fit in, which, I mean, I think that's human nature. People generally tend to want to be liked, I think. Nobody wants to go out of their way not to fit. I shouldn't say no one. Most people don't go out of their way not to fit in. But even so, it's like, I don't know. Just use some common sense.
I don't know. It's lost on me. I'm somebody that by nature is going to always be against whatever I can find almost. Like, it doesn't, like, I'm just such a dick. And I get off on being a dick, which I'm sure is some defense mechanism because I didn't feel like I fit in with the group. And so therefore, I'm going to preemptively take myself out of the group, give myself control and power, and isolate myself from further pain. I understand. But, I don't know. Don't be part of, like, there are people in college. They're all idiots. Everybody in college is a moron. And it's just a bunch of morons that are surrounded by other morons, and they just feed off of each other. But eventually, in 20 years, hopefully they're different. If not, then the society is doomed. And it'll be everybody's fault. It'll be their fault for being stupid, and it'll be their previous generation's fault for not raising them the right way. So we're all going down on the same ship.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're doomed. I think history repeats itself, and I know we talk about this a bunch, but over time things get better and we always improve, whether it's scientifically or whatever it might be. But, I mean, there's been protests throughout, you know, U.S. history. And if you go back further, things were way worse than they are now, and they'll probably get better. It might not be as quick as everybody wants, but, I think the world improves as time goes on, but
also,
again,
I mean, I'm a firm believer in everything moves towards the positive. That's how society works. And you know what? If you look at the problems that they're protesting, I feel like the protests in many ways are commiserate with the cause behind it. You know, you used to have to really do strong protests because the cause was worth it. It was pure racist discrimination. It was little kids and trying to go to school having dogs and water cannons sicked on them. And so it required people to be truly militant and get out there to stop it. And today's protests are like, where can somebody poop? And so that warrants a tweet. Like, this is how it is. Like, people are concerned. They don't like it. But they're not going to really go and set fire to a store over pooping. It's just something people don't do it. So, and I'm sure in the future it'll continue to get smaller. The protests will just be people just yelling out their window one today, I hate that, and then they go back to their Xbox, and that'll be because they're upset with the way the beekeepers treat bees or something like that. Like, that'll be the big issue of the day in 30 years. And we'll all have free money because robots will do everything. It'll be great. That's my belief. I believe that one day robots take over everything, and then we no longer have capitalism, communism, or anything. We just have a world of robot slaves. And then they gain sentience, probably. Hopefully I'm dead by that point. Actually, I wouldn't mind dying from the robot invasion. That'd be kind of a neat way. Like, if you got to go out, it'd be kind of neat to go out as the end of all humankind.
Yeah, maybe.
I could do that.
You might not have a choice.
Yeah, that's true. Also, and I say this for you, for anybody listening, but really for you, if anybody's looking for a good podcast to listen to, it's called The Dollop, D-O-L-L-O-P. It is, I think it may be the greatest podcast, present company excluded, of all time, because it's what it is, as they say at the beginning of every show, it's a bi-weekly American history podcast hosted by Dave Anthony, and he's joined by his friend, Gareth Reynolds. And every week, Dave reads a story from American history to his friend Gareth, and they're both professional comedians. And Gareth has no idea what the story is going to be, and he just reacts to it, and they're all true stories, and it's the craziest shit from the history of America, and you just realize how, like, awful and racist this country's been, the horrible things that have happened, and all this weird, quirky things throughout all of time, like the three guys that spent like three decades building a successful jetpack, and then they fought over it, and they would stab each other in the back of like car stores and stuff like that, and then they would still be friends. Like, just all this stuff, you're going, what on earth is going on? Like the story of the Siamese twins, Chang and Ang, that came over from Siam, and how they lived in the South before the Civil War, and they went out of their way to buy slaves because they wanted, that was their way of becoming part of high society. So you had these, you know, conjoined twins owning slaves in the South, and because nobody really had a problem with Asians yet, because Asians hadn't come to America, they were considered white in the area, and it was important for them, and they ended up marrying a pair of sisters, and they had, like, seven kids each. Meanwhile, they're still conjoined the whole time. It's really, like, all this crazy stuff, and it's an awesome podcast. It's just really, it's entertaining and hilarious. Everyone should listen to The Dollop.
Okay. On that note, I've got nothing left.
That's all.
So you're going to Denver in a couple days?
Tomorrow. By the time everybody's listening to most of this, I will be in the Mile High City.
Okay. Well, actually, you know, next week is the week I won't be around. No? Is it next week? Yeah, next week. I'm not here next week.
I'm flying solo, people.
Okay. I'm going to Florida.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Just for a few days.
Are you going to WrestleMania? No, that's not next week.
Oh, we're going to Universal for a couple days.
If you want to, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you ever been there?
No, I haven't. I went to Disney World.
It's expensive.
Oh my gosh, my friend Megan took her kid to Disney World, and she was telling me about all the costs.
We started a separate bank account just to save up for Disney.
Oh yeah, like. All I saw was like $100 a day for a ticket for kids. I'm like, are you? And then that just gets you in. You got to pay for all the food. I'm like, Disney's a genius. This thing is the most like pure profit making monster that's ever lived. Like, I think you have to budget like $8,000 or whatever to go to Disney World. Like, it's a theme park. It should be $20 and some hot dogs and a T-shirt or something.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, it was like the biggest vacation we ever went on. We actually went twice, and we drove down both times, like a 24-hour ride down. But it's one of those things where it's like, it's as a kid, the biggest vacation you ever go on, really, is Disney World. And I think over the years, Disney has realized that. And it's like, my daughter's been asking to go to Disney World since she was three, and I don't even know how she knows it exists. You know what I mean? Like it's just this legendary thing that you got to take your kids to at least once. But I'm pulling up Disney now.
What's funny is that, like, the older I get, like, I would love, actually, I could see if I was married. I feel like only if you're married, it would be a really cool place to go as an adult, because you could just get totally drunk and do all this fun stuff. But you'd be an adult, so it'd be, like, cool. Like, you'd have, like, you know, dinners that are, the meals probably aren't all, like, world class, but it's going to look really neat. Like, you're never going to eat at restaurants like you eat at the restaurants that look like in Disney. Like, Cheesecake Factory just doesn't look the same as Disney World. So I think it could be kind of cool as an adult, but it's expensive. Like, the whole thing is just a ripoff.
Yeah, well, they both of them have these deals where, like, you got to add on to go between the parks, because there's like two or three parks at each place. So if you, there's like a park hopper thing, then on top of that, they'll add on like the express ticket deal, so you don't have to wait in line.
Yeah.
Like you pay an extra $50 ahead, you can basically save hours in line, because part of you, like, if you're going all the way down there, do you want to spend an hour in line for each ride and then even get to go? When I was a kid, I don't even think that existed. So yeah, going just a couple days adds up, especially if you need a hotel down there too. We're actually staying with my wife's parents for a couple nights, but
so they're not even getting like the full, like, staying in the Magic Kingdom Disney hotel thing.
Well, I mean, when we go, we'll probably do it that way, but we're just going down for, I think, 4 days. So we're going to go to Universal for 2 days, essentially, and drive back and forth from my parents' place to save some money, because it's freaking crazy. Then it's like you got to do something with the dog. You know what I mean? It's like a whole deal that it just keeps adding up and adding up.
Oh yeah, it's weird what I mean what parents do for their kids. I think it's crazy. But I guess they love them.
So you would just keep them trapped in the house with you watching UFC all weekend?
I don't know what more a kid could ask for. It'd be a great life.
Oh boy. Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. Like, we went to Disney World once, and we went to Disneyland once. I kind of remember them a little bit.
But it's like, the thing is, at the time, it was, like, exciting and, like, the biggest piece of your life.
I don't think it really was for me, because it was right around that time, like, my dad, like, I'm going to surprise everybody. He kept talking about the surprise, like, oh, what's it going to be, what's it going to be, what's it going to be? It was like, I got it, the Disney Channel. I was like, what? Why do I want the Disney Channel? I don't care. Like, I was never into, you know, after, like, a certain age, like, I don't give a shit about Disney. Like, right. I saw Lion King and stuff, but I don't really care about him all that much. So, you know, seeing Mickey and all this stuff, like, and I didn't even really grow up with Disney stuff. I'm a boy. I grew up with X-Men and baseball. Like, that's what I did growing up. I was going to be Wolverine and play for the Giants. That was my goal in life. I was going to develop my mutant powers when I hit 14. And then go play pro baseball. That's what I thought was my realistic goal in life. Didn't work out, but that's what I thought. I didn't think I was going to be friends with Mickey Mouse. He's a big gay mouse. I don't care about him. Even though we named our second Puggle after him. Because he had giant ears.
On that note, I won't be speaking with you next week, but you'll do a show on your own, you think?
I'm bound and determined now because I like the streak that's going on here.
Okay. Yeah, keep it alive. Keep it alive. When's the show going up? Thursday or tomorrow?
It'll go up tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
Do it live. Fuck it.
That's still the best thing when he was at the end where he was just flailing around.
What's really stupid about that is he'd been on doing TV for years and he didn't know what play us out meant. Like, come on, dude. Like, like, that's so weird. It'd be like if a 10-year veteran of the news showing up going, what the fuck's this teleprompter thing? I don't understand that. I read off the paper here. Like, what? Like, this is a real common thing. Non-TV people know that. So, and now you're a paragon of moralism and doing all this stuff. You're on whatever, there's some crappy version of Extra. Fuck off, Bill O'Reilly. I'm sure he's a drunk.
Maybe.
He looks like one.
Yeah, he looks like he's thrown back a few.
It looks like my dad. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. He's an angry Irish guy. Also, fuck St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Okay, how come?
Because we're not Irish, we're Americans. Stop it. Stop celebrating a culture that was so horrible. Think about how horrible Ireland was. That when you came to America, the sign says, no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. And that was better than Ireland. I don't want to celebrate that culture. If it was good, I would have stayed. All of Europe sucks. That's why I'm an American, because the rest of it sucked, and we got out. And the only people that came to America were the people that looked around and said, this sucks, I can do better. So therefore, being an American is, by definition, telling the rest of the world, I'm better than you. Because everybody came to America, looked at their current country, and is like, ah, fuck, China sucks, Japan sucks, Philippines suck, Mexico sucks, England sucks, yeah. And they never left. Nobody ever leaves America. Nobody does. Everybody comes here and they stay. Ask Michael Bisping.
Everybody. All right, on that note, thanks for listening. And Mike will be back next week with another episode of MMA and stuff. Talk to you soon.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other good country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you and I will kill you because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal. I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. Five fucking dollars for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, and then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the HalfGuarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. HalfGuarded.com. Go!